Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
What's up, Open Floor Globe? I'm your host, Michael the Pod Pina, and I'm joined on the other line by my good friend, Sports Illustrated senior writer Chris Herring, a.k.a. Brother Herring, a.k.a. the Pat Riley Whisperer. Chris, it has been so long. Welcome back to Open Floor.
Yeah, man, it's been 2 weeks, 3 weeks since we've recorded? It's good to be with you again.
It's been a minute. I think most of our listeners know where you were last week, but please let those who don't know what's up.
Yeah, I was out last week. I was very out and about last week trying to promote my book that came out last Tuesday, which is called Blood in the Garden, The Flagrant History of the 1990s New York Knicks. It's been a complete blast to be able to promote it just because I'm proud of this thing, you know. 3 years ago, I started working on it 3 years ago. And it's finally out. I don't think you have to be a Knicks fan to enjoy the book or really like the book. I think the Wall Street Journal said basically you don't even have to really be a sports fan to like it. But I tried to go really deep in terms of what the 90s were and how the Knicks really shaped what that era was, despite not being the team that ever won the whole thing. I think it's kind of a good companion piece to The Last Dance. To understand what Jordan had to go through to be where he was and to be who he was. But also just, I don't think you have today's league, or at least not as quickly as you got today's league, without those Knicks teams that, you know, the league was trying to get all the way away from during those years, not to mention the personalities and, you know, the Starkses and the Masons and the Pat Rileys, not to mention mm-hmm. the fact that this was a Forrest Gump-ass team that was in like every scene and every picture, but not ever the focal point of the scene or the picture. They were just in all these integral, you know, moments to the 90s and, you know, history with the OJ chase and all the stuff with Jordan, Spike Lee and Reggie Miller, the 8 points in 9 seconds, the 25 points in the fourth quarter, Spike Lee thing. So I think it was a team that was just really fascinating in a way that we normally don't see. And I think that they're even more fascinating because they never quite won it in a way that they probably wouldn't have been if they had managed to win.
They're beloved, you're beloved. I was expecting to see you like on the Tonight Show. I'm not even going to lie. I was like, where is Chris Herring going to pop up next? Like,
I've got SportsCenter later tonight, which I'm hoping
hell
for
yeah.
that. I've got that with SVP later tonight, which is a blessing that, you know, I've had a chance. I know people are annoyed with me right now. You and I were just talking about that. I'm you know, just spraying my timeline with retweets, with people posting the book. But I'm so grateful for just how many people have made a point to order the book, to go find the book if they can't, if they can't wait for their order to come in some cases. So people have 2 and 3 copies of the book. I'm just grateful. And I actually had one day last week where I was just completely overwhelmed emotionally just by how many people to see all the support kind of at one time with everybody getting the book at the same time was just like not something I was expecting. And I don't take that for granted at all. I'm just really grateful for people that have shown love and shown support for kind of a, you know, a big moment for me in a way that I didn't necessarily expect it to be one.
I mean, that's great to hear. You deserve it. You deserve everything. Unbelievable book. Everybody go pick it up. But when you, I have a quick question. When you are saying the title of the book to people, do you always say the entire title or do you just say Blood in the Garden?
I generally say the whole title because that shit is live, first of all. Like, so I came up with this, so I'm going to take credit for it. But I initially called it Blood on the Hardwood, and my editor and agent kind of were like, you got to change it, make it more specific to the Knicks. But I thought the subtitle is almost better than the title. And it was funny because I got a call yesterday from one of the executives from that team. They're like, I love Blood in the Garden, not just because obviously the team was physical and was actually shedding blood, but also like the infighting that happened in the organization with Riley, with Ernie Grunfeld and Van Gundy. And like people kind of came out of that gutted and got fired and, you know, left the team and stuff like that. So there was literal bloodshed from a management standpoint too. It was like kind of a double entendre from that standpoint. Not to mention that when you talk about the flagrant history, you're talking about a team that had more flagrant fouls than anybody, that was rougher than anybody in the 90s. So it's full of double entendres. But, you know, I'm proud of the whole title. So you're going to get this whole title, even if Blood in the Garden would be the easier way to promote it. You're getting this whole title.
It's a great title, the whole thing. Blood in the Garden. Tremendous work by you, my guy.
Thank you so
much. Congratulations once again. Okay, Chris. So on today's show, we have a whole bunch of emails to get to. And before we dig in, a quick reminder to all of our wonderful listeners to please keep your questions coming in. They've been so fantastic. Openfloormail@gmail.com. That's openfloormail@gmail.com. Feel free to send Chris questions about the book or send autograph requests. We'll take those as well. All right, Chris. So I actually wanted to start today's show with a discussion about the Brooklyn Nets, a team that I pretty much bet my life on to win the 2021-2022 NBA title. And I am feeling weary about that prediction, that deal with the devil. Earlier this week, friend of the pod, Jake Fisher, published a story in Bleacher Report about James Harden's future in Brooklyn, in which he reported that Harden is open to exploring different opportunities as a free agent this summer. Harden did a non-denial after Tuesday night's loss against the Lakers, a game in which Brooklyn's other four starters were Patty Mills, De'Ron Sharp, DeAndre Bembry, and Kessler Edwards. There are rumblings that some Nets are not happy with Steve Nash's rotations and his lineup decisions. And, you know, despite this team being really close to first place somehow, it's starting to feel just like misaligned or cursed, or I don't know what the right word is, but you throw in Kyrie's vaccination status, you throw in Kevin Durant's sprained knee, Joe Harris's ankle rehab that is just not going well, and it just feels very muddy. And we'll go deep into these specifics in a moment. But big picture, Chris, just how are you feeling about the Nets right now?
Yeah, I mean, it's weird because there's a bunch of teams that you could look at standings-wise. Maybe not a bunch, but there's a few that you look at standings-wise, and you're like, oh, there's nothing to worry about. You know, I think the Bulls have to be on that list too, where even if they're dealing with something at the moment, you're like, there's nothing to worry about. But there is kind of a sense that it could kind of come apart quickly. And the Nets were always a team that granted, they added depth and they added some real talent to that roster in the offseason, which is why I think you were so bullish on them to begin with. So they were not as thin as they were last year. But it doesn't take that much to get really thin all of a sudden when one of your best players is only playing in half the games. And I mean, that's an improvement from 0% of the games earlier in the season. Joe Harris was a big part of what they do. Kevin Durant, you know, is a top 2-3 player in the league at worst. Having those guys out for extended time and then to have questions swirling around the one guy that, you know, to this point had been solidifying because he did not have a good start to a season in Harden. But To now have new questions about that, it's like, dog, do y'all have anything that's not like falling apart or like weird at the moment? And I don't know that the answer is yes. It feels kind of like the answer is no. So it's hard to feel real good about it. But then you look at the standings and you're like, they're not going away. They're going to be there. They're probably a team that isn't that concerned about seeding. Hell, like they might be better off with given the Kyrie situation if they're not the one seed anyway. So it's not a problem yet, but it's starting to feel like, okay, one more thing kind of falls off, you know, by the wayside, and you start to feel pretty worried because it's not a good situation right now with Brooklyn. I mean, it's just the reality.
It's not a good situation. It's an interesting one in a bad way for them. And I'm curious, Chris, like if you were Sean Marks, like I'm sure he definitely is aware, wasn't blindsided, I would imagine, by the reports, the report that came out that Fisher reported with Harden the other day, earlier this week. You know, I was hearing rumors about Harden not being happy for a while. I'm sure you were hearing similar things. But if you were Sean Marks, just like, how are you feeling right now, knowing that, you know, you traded so much to get this guy, you sign Durant and Irving a couple off seasons ago, and it was this massive coup for the organization. And this time last year, it just felt like a brewing like super team dynasty, this like colossus. And, you know, it could just crumble like real quick. And the things in the NBA are just so unforgiving. And like if Harden just decides to bounce after this season, I'm like the ripple effect could be catastrophic, honestly, for this organization. So just like if you were Sean Marks, just how are you even like feeling about the possibility of Harden not re-signing with your organization?
I mean, let's be real here. We knew what it was.
we knew
what it was when Harden. Well, let me take that back. When KD and Irving joined Brooklyn, because they did it kind of as a package deal. We saw them kikiing in the, you know, in the tunnel a couple years ago at the All-Star game, and then got the angry denials like, can't two friends just be friends without y'all making something out of it? And then they joined the same team, you know, after they've been rumored to want to go to the Knicks, they go to the other team in town. We knew that they were tight. So it's one thing for KD to potentially have tolerance for the stuff that Irving has kind of done. This, let me not even beat around the bush. Not stuff. The vaccination issue. It's one thing, right, if KD says he's not going to badmouth that and not going to take issue with it because Kyrie's his boy. It's asking more of Harden to do that when Harden is not necessarily boys with this dude. You know, when they have more work to do because this is someone that, you know, for whatever his reasons are, if you want to call him an anti-vaxxer, if you want to say that it's, you know, power to the people because, you know, he's looking out for the everyman, I don't give a damn what you're saying. Like I said, when I wrote a column about Kyrie much earlier in the season, okay, you can boil this down to whatever you want to, but it also does come down to his team and the fact that his team is a contending team that is without a top 15, 20 player in this league because Kyrie is choosing not to be vaccinated. So ultimately, that puts more wear and tear on Harden. It puts more wear and tear on KD. It puts more pressure on those guys to perform. And, you know, even now, Kyrie at best is playing half the games. So I don't blame Harden if that's kind of his feeling, because he didn't necessarily sign there because he was such close friends with those guys. He signed there, or not signed there, he wanted to be traded there because it was the best chance to win a title. Maybe he has a relationship with KD. Maybe. It wasn't about Kyrie and his friendship with Kyrie, I don't think. So I don't blame him for feeling that way. You know, and if you're Sean Marks, I don't really know what the answer is. Like, part of me feels like you just have to go for it and try to win this title and hope that that kind of solidifies whatever feeling Harden is having. I mean, the thing that Jake had in the story is that it doesn't mean that Harden's out. It means that, like, it's not a slam dunk for him to come back. I think he's still going to consider Brooklyn at the end of the day. It's going to be hard for him to find a situation that's more competitive than the one that he's in, but he might just be tired of dealing with the BS. Quite frankly, like, it's a weird situation that, frankly, if the virus doesn't go away and the mandates don't change with it, that, you know, this could be something that happens next season too. Like, who wants to sign up for that? So, and Harden's going to have options. He's never fundamentally been just a free agent that I know of. Maybe he has, but it seems like he's always been locked into place with the situation. So, like, I don't blame dude for wanting to test his options. And, like, to some extent, Kyrie has had a couple scenarios in a row now. I mean, dating back to the end of his time with Cleveland, Boston, where he says, you know, if you'll have me, I'm here for the rest of my life. And then, you know, two months later with the SpongeBob meme. Like, what are you supposed to say? Like, it looks bad at a certain point. And I think there is a larger conversation to be had about Kyrie. And, like, if we want to call it kind of a flimsiness to what he does and what he says, there is that here. And I don't blame Harden for potentially not wanting to be part of that. So, of course, you have to consider everything. But, what I was going to say, I don't think they're going to trade Harden unless he was requesting a trade away from a team that was in first place that had a good chance to win a title, which is what he did when he was with Cleveland.
So I want to get into Kyrie in a second, and I have a couple questions about his situation with the team going forward. But the other team that Harden, you know, you said it would be tough for Harden to leave because finding another competitive situation is difficult. There's obviously the Sixers, and they are very good, despite not having Ben Simmons this season. They're third in net rating in January. Joel Embiid, still not, in my opinion, on Jokic's level, but Jokic is like one of the greatest players like ever, it looks like. So that's not an insult at all. But Embiid is incredible. Like the stretch that Embiid is on right now is just he's playing the best basketball of his career. He's an absolute monster. If Jokic didn't exist, Embiid would probably be, I don't know if he's a runaway, but he would be the favorite, I think. Odds on favorite. There's a few other candidates, but like Giannis, but Embiid probably would win his first MVP this season, I think.
I think he was my pick before the season, too. Was he? I can't remember anymore.
Just take credit. Take credit, man. Yeah, sure. He was your pick.
If I'm lying, somebody's going to pull receipts and be like, old takes exposed or something. I don't want that smoke.
Chris, my pick was Trae Young. So I, you know, just you know, say you picked Embiid and you're good. You're golden. You're a lot smarter than I am. Okay, so like, I'm just going to ask you, do you think Harden is going to be on the Nets next season? Or do you think Harden is going to be on the Sixers next season? Because there's like all these connections, obviously, that have been talked about ad nauseum with Harden and Philadelphia, Daryl Morey, Tad Brown, Michael Rubin. He has a relationship with the minority owner for the Sixers. And you would think that if you're Harden, you look around and you're like, I trust Morey. I've had a lot of success with Morey. I was empowered like no other in Houston. I could do whatever I wanted. I don't know if he can still do whatever he wants in Brooklyn. But it seems like that situation, plus, you know, playing with Embiid is just a little bit different than playing with Kyrie and with KD in the style that Harden likes to play. And do you think he will be in Philadelphia next season, or do you think he will be ultimately still in Brooklyn?
I kind of still think he'll be in Brooklyn, but I'm also kind of one of those, I have to see it to believe it, that it's happening with regards to the trade stuff. I know the conversations are there. I know I trust fully that it's something that Harden's considering, given that he kind of gave the non-answer, but maybe I just have to see him, similar to me having to see him in a Brooklyn uniform before he left Houston. You know, just for some reason, it's like, that's a big hurdle for me to get over. Also, man, and look, like, obviously if Harden really wants out, and makes that known, then, you know, he'll find a way to get somewhere else. But the idea of Harden potentially ending up in Philly, and by, you know, that meaning essentially that Simmons is going to end up with Brooklyn. So my fundamental question about all of it is, like, so if you're trading Harden there to Philly, I guess it means that Simmons is coming to the Nets, which he fits fundamentally next to guys like Kyrie and KD. But part of me thinks, like, if Kyrie is there, and you always imagine something's going to come up with him, and then Simmons just kind of has had the year he's had with the Sixers, it's a lot of stuff to have in your locker room. I mean, obviously Simmons is fundamentally different than Kyrie, but it's still kind of like if something goes wrong or if they have a bad playoff flame out and Simmons is a big part of that, I do kind of start to wonder if you've got a lot of stuff on KD's shoulders just from, you know, kind of the personalities he has in that locker room. I don't know. It on court wise, it fits because it makes their defense better. It gives them better passing in their offense, or maybe not better because Harden's a great passer, but I could be convinced of it working, but I just wonder that on some level, like, you've definitely got some egos and some stuff going on in that locker room that are just kind of weird, maybe beyond what you already have, quite frankly.
It would be odd, and I do think the Nets could still win the title. I also think that the Nets would be potentially building and helping create a really good team in Philadelphia.
They would.
That could beat them in a playoff series, and that would be problematic. So, you know, for this to all happen, I think the Nets would have to, there's a lot of different permutations here that we don't need to get into, but the Nets would probably have to agree to a sign and trade with Harden, and it just gets really complicated. But I want to talk real quick about Kyrie, because his situation is, I think, more immediate in terms of being a dilemma for the Nets. Like, he's come back, obviously. He came back a few weeks ago against the Pacers, only playing on the road. He's only played 7 games, I think. And he's looked terrific. Like, he just looks, he's finishing at the basket. He just looks like there was no time off at all with him.
I know.
His numbers are ridiculous. And it has me wondering, like, if you're the Nets, so Kyrie's contract situation is essentially that he has a $36.9 million player option for next season. And obviously he can opt out of that and enter free agency, sign wherever he wants, or he could opt in which case you're paying this guy $37 million to, look, I don't know what the situation is going to be with the vaccine mandate. I don't think it's going anywhere for the foreseeable future in New York City. So I have no idea what the appetite would be if the Nets do not win the title this year to bring Kyrie back or have the chance of paying Kyrie to play 50% of the season. I don't, especially if things go real bad in the playoffs because of his refusal to take the vaccine. So my question is just like, do you try to circumvent that knowing that his trade value is actually, I would say it's decent given how well he's played, all things considered, knowing that he has the contract situation and he can become an unrestricted free agent. But like, if you're the Nets, how aggressively do you shop him? Like right now.
Oh, Ben, I would have been shopped him. Like, I don't know if we talked about that on the pod. I remember I was begging us to not have to talk about
months ago
Kyrie and Ben Simmons because I'm like, please, this is going to be an issue for months. With Kyrie, though, his is like a fundamental principle for him, which, like, you've got Brad Beal, who's essentially said the same thing. You had Wiggins that would have said the same thing if he wasn't playing in San Francisco, where the same thing is in place. So, I mean, you have players that aren't going to take the vaccine. That you could solve that by just being in a different market. I mean, part of me feels like you could trade him. Now, my question about it before was like, is Durant going to have a problem with this? And if so, does that create different problems for you? Because he's the one guy that I imagine you don't want leaving under any circumstances for any reason, even if it's over something like this where, you know, if you're the Nets, I think most people can understand why you don't really want to kowtow to someone making $40 million and paying them the full $40 million for playing half the games. But if Durant says, I'm going to flip out if you trade Kyrie, what are you supposed to do? Mm-hmm. You know, like, you can't let all three of the guys walk out over the same issue. You know, Harden, I think you could lose. And now you're not excited about losing someone of his caliber, but you don't feel that way about KD. I just don't think there's any circumstance in which you let that happen. So you probably have that conversation with him, but I don't know where he stands on that.
So would you feel great about giving Kyrie a 4 or 5 year contract this offseason?
If he's
like, that's what I want.
New. Would you? Would Kyrie?
Absolutely not.
He probably would feel great about it. But I mean, like, would anyone? I mean, even in another market, even if it's not the question about the vaccine, like the idea of whether Kyrie just kind of wears out his welcome within 2-3 years of any place is also a question that you have to ask with him being one of the leaders of your team. I think you absolutely have to ask that. So I don't know. I legitimately don't know. But again, like if you're putting that in Katie's hands to some extent to say, like, what do you feel about this? I'd be very interested to hear his answer.
I would too. You would need truth serum. I also think that if you gave Kyrie a long-term contract, you could, you know, to be cynical about it, you could pull a Blake Griffin and just trade him as soon as possible on the contract, knowing that there's a little bit more value. But then again, Kyrie could retire. Like, it's just like such a mess, such a thorny situation, and I don't know how they're going to navigate it. My last question for you, Chris, about the Nets before we move on is just over under 0.5 championships for Brooklyn over the next 5 years. Are you going over or are you going under?
Under.
Under. Wow. Under.
Yeah. I mean, because we think about all this stuff we just discussed about what we don't know about them. Like, you know, and it's putting a lot on Katie's shoulders. And remember, when we did the, you know, the top 100 for the guys in the league right now, I was the only one that didn't take KD, and it was strictly a health question. And that was before we knew that he was going to have to carry a lot of weight on his shoulders potentially this year because of the stuff with Kyrie, because Harden was going to struggle at the beginning of the season. I think it's a relevant question. And even if KD can carry them on his back for a season, a postseason, do you want him to have to do that as he starts to get older? He's not a young guy anymore.
So I don't want to go off on a tangent or divert from our scheduled outline, but I'm just curious because you brought up the top 100 and your steadfast belief in Giannis was really smart and prescient. If we were doing that right now, who would be number one for you on the top 100?
I'd probably still take Giannis. I mean, I would be a lot more open to considering Jokic to number one, which I don't think really any of us did. I think you have to be open to that.
Jokic,
he was what was he
Jokic
in our rankings?
My number one.
Four? Was he five? I can't remember where he was. Was he six?
Fourth or fifth? Yeah, I hope he wasn't six.
I hope he wasn't either. I think he was, but like I think we probably had LeBron three, and then Jokic was probably four. You're probably right. So like, yeah, I mean Jokic probably needs to be number two in that conversation. You know, and KD again. Well, Jokic needs to be either two or three, but I think that KD, you could make the argument always that he's number one if he's healthy. But I just kind of had the question of like whether we can rely on that at this point in his career.
Yeah, very, and it's proven accurate. He's hurt, and you know, tough situation. I think I'd go Jokic for the record. No disrespect,
would not
else,
blame you at all. Awesome. It's hard to disagree. Hard to.
Okay, let's open up the mailbag, Chris. We have an email from Nick who writes, since the blockbuster Jimmy Butler trade, Zach LaVine has simply gotten better and better. In his first few years in Chicago, we were told that he was not good enough. Then, when he was good enough, it was down to the fact that he was an empty calorie scorer and that the Bulls, quote, weren't a winning organization. Now the Bulls are winning. And this still does not seem to be enough for a man who has proven himself to be one of the most efficient shooters in the NBA. In your latest podcast, Michael was surprised to hear Rohan suggest LaVine should make the All-Star team. Despite the Bulls finally having a winning organization and LaVine continuing to have a stellar season, LaVine's name is still being disrespected. So what gives? Why does Zach LaVine seem to be treated with a little disrespect in comparison to other stars? Why does he not benefit from the same caveats as other middle-tier stars like Devin Booker and Trae Young? At some point, the league needs to wake up and recognize that this man is an all-NBA star and can bring a ring back to Chicago. Keep up the great work. I love the pod. Thank you, Nick, for this email. I just want to clarify very quickly that I was not surprised that Rohan had Zach LaVine on his team. Rohan threw out Zach LaVine's name as a starter, and that made me raise my eyebrows a little bit. But today on the site, on SI.com, which everyone can go check out, I published my Eastern Conference All-Star picks, and Zach LaVine was on my team. So I am not disrespecting Zach LaVine. I think he's a wonderful player, having a wonderful season. Just want to make sure that is clear. Do you feel, I want to talk about the Bulls, use this question to kind of springboard into a conversation real quick about the Bulls, because they're backsliding a little bit right now with so many injuries. But do you feel like LaVine doesn't get the same recognition as other guys, you know, like Devin Booker, like Trae Young? Obviously, he's never played in the postseason. I think that is the number one reason for any disrespect or whatever you want to call it. Yeah. Do you kind of feel the sentiment of Nick and what he's kind of trying to express
here? I think he's spot on, not in terms of what you were saying about the way you viewed him, but I think in terms of, I mean, I think he belongs in that same list. And I had a preseason story kind of saying that I thought the Bulls would be really good this year. And we did a daily cover for it at SI, and I think it said, the Suns, the Hawks, why not the Bulls was the headline on it, or at least the cover art. So, I mean, I literally make the argument, and I asked Arturis Karnišovas from the Bulls, is that the hope that you guys are going to be kind of the next team in that list of teams that kind of goes in and makes a big move or a couple of big moves and then tries to springboard, you know, in one season because you have the guy that you want to build around and now you've built something substantial around him and try to make that work? And he essentially said, yeah, of course that made us more hungry to try to, you know, make it work quickly. And the only thing that was missing from those guys' resumes, really, they're wonderful scorers, you know, wonderful playmakers, you know, efficient players, you know, as far as getting to the line, Devin Booker just being a monster for mid-range. Zach LaVine has been very good for years. He was really efficient last year, as an all-star last year, so he already had that validation. But the Bulls had the worst record in the league over the last 4 years prior to this one. So, you know, when I wrote that story, there were people complaining. You said Zach LaVine's not a superstar. Like, shame on you. You can't be a superstar and your team is in last place over the last 4 years. Like, you have maybe, keep in mind, you have maybe 7 or 8 superstars in the whole league. You know, 7 or 8.
Yep.
So it's not being merely an all-star. It's not even being an all-NBA guy necessarily. Like, you have 5 or 6 guys that no matter what team you put them on can drag their team to the playoffs. And LaVine, to this point, has not shown to be able to do that. He's still not doing that. I mean, he's on a team now where he's got essentially an equal, maybe even a guy that's done a little bit more than he has this year in DeRozan. But he's a fine player. He's a very, very good player. And he is going to probably get his props this year when they make a playoff appearance. And, you know, a guy that has been averaging 25, 26 a game for the last couple of years on really good efficiency. So, I think we always tend to overlook those guys or say that it's empty calories until they win. And then all of a sudden, even when some of their tendencies are still bad, like Trae Young has played some horrendous defenses here. So he still has a lot of those flaws, but nobody calls them empty calories anymore because they almost made it to the finals last year. So, I mean, it literally can be something that changes over the course of 1 year, even if it's not necessarily sustainable. The Hawks may not even make the playoffs this year, but I think the narrative has already changed on Trae Young just based on the one really, really great year that his team had. And I think the Bulls are in the midst of that right now, doing that for LaVine.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, DeRozan's had a better year than LaVine, and I think you'd agree that he's more deserving of a starter spot on the All-Star team as one of the backcourt candidates. And the Bulls, you know, when DeRozan's on the floor without LaVine, they see like no drop off offensively, and they're still really good. They have a pretty good net rating regardless. When LaVine's been on the floor, I know these are all messy. When LaVine's been on the floor without DeRozan, they're just bad. And so I'm not saying that's an indictment of LaVine, but that's what the numbers say so far this season. And, you know, they're very similar players beyond obviously LaVine's penchant to just, you know, rise up from 30 feet and drill ridiculously difficult shots multiple times per game, where DeRozan is primarily functioning in the mid-range. And LaVine also does a really good job getting to the basket, and he's shooting like 70% at the rim this season, which is like absurd for someone at his position. But yeah, no, I mean, like, I don't want this to feel like we're not thinking that Levine's good. I want to see him in the playoffs. I want to see him do things in the playoffs. I think he can. It's just a matter of being on the right team and having the right supporting cast. And that brings me to what's going on in Chicago with, you have Lonzo Ball out for 6 to 8 weeks, I believe. Obviously, Patrick Williams has been out for like this whole season with a wrist injury. Alex Caruso is out with a wrist injury after Grayson Allen's flagrant foul. Who am I missing here? I feel like there's others. Derrick Jones Jr. is still out too. Yes.
Got a couple guys. Derek Basically, Jones anybody Jr. that can guard anybody is out for that team.
Yes. And I mean, you look at, I know these are, some of these are more recent, but you look at this team's performance in January, they're 6-7, 23rd defense in the NBA over that stretch. Just, it's been tough for Chicago, 18th in offense and a net rating of minus 3.8. And, you know, Vucevic has not been super. You know, honestly, there's,
you could say he's not been
saying,
you could just say it. He hasn't even been good.
He's not been good. And even like, you know, I'm just going to say like Wendell Carter might be having a better season. Yep. It's like close. Maybe I shouldn't go there, but it's interesting to compare those two right now. And wonder, you know, about that trade and the draft picks and everything. I'm not saying the Bulls shouldn't have made it, but I guess like how concerned should the Bulls be right now? Do you see them sliding in the standings? I think they're still like right up there for second, third place with Miami and with Brooklyn, but could you see them sliding?
You know, the crazy thing, man, it's, I think all the teams, the top five teams in the East are all separated by like 2.5 games. It's very, right. I mean, like from Cleveland to Miami and, you know, in between Philly, they're all within 2.5 games, which is a little bit scary if you're a team like the Bulls, because they're kind of primed. They look like a very clear candidate to like be bad for a while. They've lost their two best defenders, but even beyond the best ones, they've lost all their key wing defenders. I think maybe Javonte Green is still there. And that's about it. I think they just got him back from either COVID or an injury or something like that.
Yes.
So, you know, my best friends are diehard Bulls fans, and they're like, oh, they're going to be fine. I'm like, based on what? Even when they had that 9-game winning streak last month, earlier this month, they were not very good on defense during that stretch. And that was before they had lost Lonzo Ball. It was when they were expecting to get Caruso back, and then they got Caruso back for like 2 games. And then this happens. So, I'm not expecting them to be very good defensively for this stretch. Will they fall out of the playoff race? No. Do I expect them to be good with it just being Levine and DeRozan? And, you know, you're hoping that Vooch can find a stroke at some point. I don't like the idea of this team just trying to outscore teams for the next month and a half, 2 months. I just don't. I'm sure they'll still make the playoffs. I don't know what seed they'll be. And I do think it kind of matters for a team like this that hasn't been in the playoffs before. You just mentioned Levine. We don't really know how he's going to, you know, adjust and react to that. It's, you know, you've still got young guys on this team who haven't been there. So I'm curious. They clearly needed, and now it's interesting because before I would have said you have to go all in because you're a one seed midway through the season. Now I don't know how I feel about that as far as how much do you give up to try to make a jump. You know, before I would have said go all out to get like a Harrison Barnes, or, you know, seems like Jeremy Grant is being very targeted about where he wants to be sent, but go all out for those guys. If you have to trade Patrick Williams to do it, you know, you have to kind of swallow hard and do it, is the way I felt before. Now I don't know that. Like if you're squeaking into the playoffs, I don't know that I feel that way. If you're making it as like a top two seed, I think you have to do that because you might not ever have a better shot than now. But the challenge is, I don't know that getting somebody like a Jeremy Grant or a Harrison Barnes, like, it doesn't make them a favorite over any of the teams that are right there at the top. Like, I would still take Milwaukee. If Brooklyn's healthy and they've got 2.5 guys, meaning, you know, Kyrie is playing on the road, I would take Brooklyn. And really, with the Heat and how shorthanded they've been this year and how good they've looked, I would take them. That's the difficult thing, is like, you could make a trade. You probably should make a trade just because you never know when you'll get this opportunity again. but I don't know who it makes them a favorite over, even if they do swing a trade like that. And I don't think they have the firepower to go out and get someone more high level than that either.
I guess they just have to clone Ayo Dosunmu, who's like, I love him so much. I can't believe that he was a second round pick. It befuddles me. I don't watch college basketball really, but I'm just like, how did every team in the league plus
it's like first team All American, I think,
multiple
too.
Multiple times.
Was a star scorer there.
He's incredible.
And like, he's done all the stuff that he wasn't able to do at the college level. He's just been like a beast defensively. He's high energy. He's perfect for that team. And I love that he plays with a ton of high energy, seemingly because he knows that's his way to stay on the floor. Like, they don't really need him to score a whole lot with who they've got on this team. I love it. I love the way he plays.
Yeah, I was watching they barely beat the Thunder the other night. And
only because
Dosunmu,
of him.
Who he was going like toe to toe with SGA, and then he fouled out, and like the Bulls just fell apart. And it was just like, yikes, this is not a good sign if you are the Chicago Bulls right now, depending so much on a 22-year-old rookie.
That's where they're at right now. Thin team.
That is where they're at right now. Okay, let's move on to this really interesting email from Dan, who writes, is there a trade construction for the Nuggets and the Celtics to swap Jamal Murray and Michael Porter Jr., plus maybe some picks, for Jaylen Brown and Marcus Smart? The Nuggets have an MVP and should be in win-now mode. Brown and Smart seem to be a clean fit in Denver. The Celtics, on the other hand, are not contenders and can wait for Murray and MPJ to get healthy. They desperately need a guard/player who can create for his teammates, and Jamal is definitely an upgrade in playmaking for them. What do you think? Really interesting email, Dan.
Fascinating.
I don't think this will ever happen, and I don't think either team would say yes, but it's actually just like an incredible fake theoretical trade idea. Yep. For all the reasons that Dan outlines. Like, what do you think about this, Chris?
No. I was actually going to kind of tennis strike this back in your direction, because I know the outcome of this would matter a lot more to you than me, but I loved the concept of it. I was kind of with you where I don't know that either team does it. Right. I think Denver probably just believes in their ability to rehab those guys and bring them back. And, you know, it's not to say you ever want to waste a year of someone's run, but what can you really do? Like, those are your guys. You definitely trust in Jamal Murray. You've seen that concept play out and work already. You know, I don't know that you want to replace that and get someone that's not a guard, really. I mean, obviously, Jaylen Brown can play either wing position, but like, you've got a point guard already, and now you're kind of just replacing that. Marcus Smart would be great to have, but I don't know. I don't know that I'm doing that if I'm Denver, and if I'm Boston, I don't know that you're ruling yourself out so much as a contender and saying, well, let's just do something else here. Unless you're just really ready to move on from Jaylen, I don't know that you do that trade either, because you don't know that, like, Michael Porter's back could always be a problem. It's a little bit early to say that, but that was a concern and why he dropped in the draft boards before. So now that he's actually having real problems with it, I don't know that you can just automatically assume that these guys are going to be healthy for the rest of their careers.
Yeah, I mean, Michael Porter's back is for sure a red flag. His contract, which is humongous, I would not want any part of that if I was, you know, any other team in the league. Not saying he can't come back and be terrific. It's just fascinating because the fits are pretty clean.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think anyone can play with Jokic. So you put, I mean, just imagining Jaylen Brown and Marcus Smart with like Aaron Gordon and Jokic and Will Barton, like that's a lineup right there that I don't know who's messing with that lineup. That is ridiculous in the playoffs, especially in that type of environment. But you go to the Celtics, and then it's basically, yeah, we're just going to punt on this year. We're going to hope that Jamal Murray is really good and back to what he used to be. Kind of without Jokic, though, which is interesting. And like, how much does MPJ and how much does Jamal Murray complement and enhance Jason Tatum is another question you have to ask yourself. And I kind of agree with Dan's point about Jamal Murray being a better playmaker, of course, than either of those guys. But I don't know. It's just, it's a fascinating one. It'll never happen. But it is, it's really interesting to think about. So I just wanted to read that email from Dan.
I love
that.
Thank
you so much for writing that one in. Let's have, you know, I have a kind of a jokey question for you in a minute. And Chris, but I have a last email that I want to get to. And it comes in from Stavros, who writes, let's play start, bench, cut, cut. You're starting a franchise from scratch and you need someone to anchor your defense. Your options are Draymond Green, Hakeem Olajuwon, Giannis Antetokounmpo, and Tim Duncan.
Good Lord.
There is no wrong answer here for anything.
Thank goodness.
Gotta be clear there.
Good Lord.
Do you want to give yours, your start, bench, cut, cut?
Not really, but I will. I mean, that's an extremely difficult question. And I don't even feel good about the rankings that I've got. So I'll start Hakeem. My guy on the bench will be Draymond. And I'm going to like really just grit and like grimace and cut Giannis. And then I'm going to cut Tim Duncan. But what on earth? That is such a hard question.
So I'm starting Tim Duncan.
Wow.
I'm benching Timmy D, baby. Just the defensive anchor for – I mean, look at those defensive ratings for those Spurs teams.
I mean, some incredible. Of the best in history, right? I know.
And I do think that in today's game, he'd be okay. I don't, you know, you're not switching everything, but he'd be perfectly fine and an incredible rim protector, incredible defender.
Who was your first guy off the bench?
So I like him. I got Hakeem coming off the bench.
Okay.
And I actually was watching, I wanted to watch some footage, some highlights, some defensive highlights of him before I made that decision because Draymond and Giannis are obviously so fresh in my mind. What do you got to say about Hakeem? So much of his defensive strengths were post defense as a player, and that's kind of a little bit irrelevant now. But
he was nimble as hell, though.
Athletically,
man.
Yeah, he'd be fine in today's game.
He killed any chance the Knicks had of winning a championship in game 6. Obviously, I know that era now. Look at the play that he blocks John Starks in the last play of the game. How far he travels to block the shot and essentially get a fingernail on the shot. But he just knew he had the instincts to just leave Patrick Ewing alone in the middle of the lane to go chase Starks because he knew Vernon Maxwell wasn't going to get there. And I mean, he has to run, race 15, 20 feet over. It makes no sense how far he travels and still gets a fingernail on the block, on the ball. And it changes the trajectory of the game, the shot, the series. They win the series. That dude was a beast. And he was a 2-time defensive player of the year in a year where he won MVP. He's one of, I think, 3 guys to do that for. Maybe with Giannis now. Michael, him, Giannis. I think it's just the 3 of them, maybe.
I think it's just the 3, yeah. Because Embiid, I remember Embiid saying he wanted to do it and join Hakeem and MJ. Okay, Chris, so I want to end today's show now with a question that has little to do with basketball, depending on what your answer is, I guess. but I know you did an event that we actually posted on our feed, the Open Floor feed, with a book event with Spike Lee, acclaimed director, Oscar winner, icon, one of my favorite people in entertainment, period. And I have a quick question for you. Just what is your favorite Spike Lee movie?
That's a harder question than the one about the Nuggets and the Celtics in that trade. So my favorite one to watch, just like that I'm completely transfixed by when I have it on my screen, is Malcolm X. But the best one that I would just have to give total props to and say like it might be a flawless movie is Do the Right Thing.
These are correct answers. Congratulations, you passed.
Yeah, I'm giving you one more too, just because I don't care. I'm giving you 3. The one that doesn't get talked about enough for how effing good it is 25th Hour. It's an incredible movie.
That's a very
good such
movie.
A good movie. And it's like the ending of it stays with me to this day. Like I can picture it in my head and hear the lines in my head. Just such a brilliant movie. I love it. But anyway, what would yours be? What would your movie be? Or if you've got a list like me?
I go where you go here with like Malcolm X's his most impressive movie, I think, and Do the Right Thing is his best movie. I would say that's how I would go with it. He'll be remembered for Do the Right Thing above all else when he's long gone. That's just like
that movie holds up so effing well for how long ago that was made. Yeah. It's scary how like relevant it is today.
It's perfect. The first rated R movie I ever snuck into was He Got Game. So that holds a special place in my heart.
That recruitment scene, my God, your virgin ears and eyes.
But yeah, I wanted to bring it back to you basically becoming Spike Lee's best friend over, you know, the past few weeks and how insanely jealous I am of that, and called you Brother Herring at the top because I like basically dropped my phone in a cup of water when I was scrolling through Instagram and saw Spike Lee, his post, just like, I was like, wait a minute.
You had a Usual Suspects moment when you saw Spike Lee post.
I was like,
copy of my book?
My brain just got so frazzled.
Kaiser Soze?
Yeah, exactly. I was like, what is going on right now? Yeah. Is he talking about the same Chris Herring? Like, is there another one? This is incredible. I can't even imagine how that was for you, let alone to sit in the same room across from him and have a conversation for an hour. Like, incredible stuff. So...
yeah, no, he took me to a Knicks game, sat courtside with him.
I don't know if you incredible. I was commenting in our text thread that I know that you mute, which I've muted as well because I don't like Rohan anymore. Just kidding. But
it gets to be a bit much. I look up and I've got 63 text messages when I normally have like one or two. And I'm like, okay, it's like my bat signal to the fact to like avoid this group chat at all costs, basically.
Yes, exactly. And I was like, is that Chris Herring or is that Dame Dash? I thought it was Dame Dash.
Ah!
I was like, incredible stuff. But it was Chris Herring, Brother Herring.
Man.
So I think that's a wonderful.
That is still really crazy to me.
It is very crazy. I think that's a wonderful place for us to end today's show. Chris, thank you so much. Thank you so much to our listeners. Thank you so much to Shelby, our wonderful producer. Everyone, please keep the emails coming. They've been so tremendous. Openfloormail@gmail.com. That's openfloormail@gmail.com. Everyone, please stay safe. Everyone, please buy Chris's book. Everyone, please continue to enjoy the NBA season.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.